tonight we are not doing How to Start a Riot. We are going to pause that for the next 2 weeks. Next week, Thomas Jackson, Brother Thomas Jackson, is going to be preaching. And this week, tonight, we're going to do something that is near and dear to a lot of our hearts, even if you haven't known this is what it was. So before we get started tonight, Ecclesiastes says, wisdom is found in the heart, in the house of mourning. And here's what it means by that. I want us to take just 20 seconds and think about what kind of funeral we want to have. I'm serious. We're going to just be silent for 20 seconds, and I want you to imagine what you would like your funeral to be like. Sounds dark. Just go with me on this. It'll make sense in a second. Let's be silent for 20 seconds. Imagine the funerals that you've been to that have meant the most. You have seen people who were able to do well what we're talking about tonight. The reason I want to start there is because what we're talking about is so countercultural, but it's so necessary. So the very nature of an institution is to be able for people of different groups and backgrounds and ages to be able to work together. That involves a lot of generosity, trying to see things from other people's perspective. The best funerals that I have ever done or been a part of were older people who had learned how to do this well, and there were people who were younger who were weeping at their grave. That's the kind of funeral I would like to have. I would like to pour my life out for the generations around me as well. So one of the things that we're doing tonight, there's a group of PV people who have gone to Fuller. They're going to explain a little bit of that. And they've done this program of all the different churches that are effectively doing generational diversity well together, which means we don't want to be a church of one generation. That is a real easy thing to start. The problem with it is it only lives one generation. And some of the most creative people in our culture today, some of the most creative Christians, are creating churches that will die when they do. So part of what we're trying to do is be a multi-generational church. And that is challenging. That is difficult. So I'd like to invite the team up here who went to Fuller. They studied the best practices of 250 churches who are really good at this. And they're going to coach us on how we're going to give information and feedback as a church this Sunday and why that really, really matters for us to live a good life. Who needs this mic?
Can you hear me? So we have heard at this place for a little over a year now, Jonathan used the phrase generational generosity. And I've had more than one person come up to me and say, what does that mean? All right. So for those of you who have asked me that question, and I've given you that answer, and for everybody else in the room, turn to somebody beside you and try to explain to them what generational generosity means to you. Take just a minute and look somebody, and if you have no idea, then maybe we'll give you some things next time you can say differently. So has everybody got a great answer? Does somebody want to just stump the rest of the room by giving their great answer? We ought to pick somebody out. Lazarus wanted to pick somebody out and call on him. No, he didn't want to do that. So it really is something that we probably all need to spend a little bit of time talking about. What does that mean, and what does it look like at the end of something that we're going to spend a lot of time doing? So I'll share just a little bit about my first impressions of that, and then towards the end we might talk a little bit about what that may mean now. When we first met with Jonathan and interviewed him as elders, he shared that thought with us. As a guy who is entering his later stages of life, I would call it the fourth quarter, and I would like to be like the Razorbacks used to be when I was growing up, and they'd hold up those four fingers and say, fourth quarter's ours. I want to be able to do that now, but I want to think about God and say, fourth quarter's ours. So for me, it has been something that I have been saying, what does it mean when a person that's getting old has a chance to still have an impact on someone that's younger? And so Psalms 71:18 resonates with me and has long before we started interviewing Jonathan. So Psalms 71:18, even when I'm old and gray, do not forsake me, my God, till I declare your power to the next generation and your mighty acts to all who are to come. Generational generosity to me is some of that, is how do we as a generation that has lived much of life and think we have a lot of answers, have the opportunity to literally do that? Well, one of the issues that, one of the phrases they said out there at Fuller that really impacted me, because I'm a wordy sort of person, it hurt my feelings a little bit. They said something one of the sessions that said, it makes a lot more difference what's going on in that other person's head than what's coming out of your mouth. That didn't feel good, but it sounded very true. And so one of the issues there is, how do we bridge that gap between those things, especially those of us who are in the older generation, think we would long for someone else to get a chance to hear? And it may be one of the things we're going to talk about in just a minute, and that is listening well. That in order to have the right to tell your story, you probably have to listen to someone else's story first. So that's part of what this is. You know, the next verse that sort of means a lot to me is often those folks following Jesus kept arguing about who's the greatest. And they had one of those arguments in Matthew 18 and recorded it, and he sort of says, bring me a child, and I'll help you understand what it means to be great in the kingdom. And then a verse back in my early childhood with this church, with one of my spiritual mentors, when I was a teen, he was trying to get me to be brave enough to do something. The passage in 1 Timothy, he said to me, and it's in that same passage in Timothy where he's saying older women should teach younger women, and older men should model to younger men. It's also saying, don't let anybody look down on you because you're young. This is something that this church wants to do well. This church has done well at various stages in time. But right now, we want to spend some time talking about why that is important overall. And so next, we have Laz.
All right, it's really important for me because I've met a whole lot of people here that have gone through life, way ahead and learned so much more. Their mistakes are going to be repeated and have been done, and people have learned from that. And if I can learn from that and be mentored from that, that is what generational generosity was really good for me. And, I found that within this church. And so that's why it means so much to me. Oh, I'm so sorry. We didn't rehearse that. All right, so I thought everyone was going to share. So, all right, so this is a little misleading, but so I want to talk about what the generational situation we're in is, and so I'm going to need a volunteer. And so as a volunteer, I'm going to get – here, Jonathan, why don't you come up here? We're going to give him a taste of, his own medicine here. How are you doing today?
That's good now.
Good. Okay, let's go this way. So we're going to do a little game. This is an illustration. I'm not really good with English. I'm from another country. If you don't know now, And So I can't explain things really well, so I have to show it through an image or metaphor, okay? So you and I are going to play this game called Life. Okay. Well, the Life game. I just came up with that. Okay. So you're going to stand here, and some of you may have seen a variation of this, but what we're going to do is, we're beginning. Okay. We're at, you know, yeah. Here you are, and we're trying to go that way, right? Right. That's when you succeed and life is great. And yeah. And so what we're going to do, I'm going to ask a question, and if your question is yes to that, you take a step forward. I'm taking steps too. We're both answering the same questions. Yeah. Or taking a step back, and I'll tell you when to take a step back. All right, so we're going to get going here. Patient with me. All right, so if you grew up in Arkansas, take a step forward. If you're born in Arkansas, take a step forward. Born and grow up. Wow, 2 steps away. All right, the next one is if you grew up in a church, take a step forward. If you grew up in a church with like 10 members, take 1 step. He's on the way to Holy Land, y'all. I'm still over here. All right, so the next one is if you went to Harding University, take a step forward. All right. Now, if you attended at any point Abilene Christian University, take a step back. We're both taking a step back. I know. We're doing that because it's called Almost Christian University. It's not like Harden. Okay. So, if you're married, take 1 step forward. If you have at least 1 kid, take 1 step forward. Well, you just did it. If you have more than 4 kids, take 2 steps. Anyways. So this exercise was done a lot for, like, you know, to show privilege in different circumstances, on different backgrounds, things like that. But what I wanted to show today was how life and life circumstances and what we go through can create a big chasm about us. Now, I'm so glad he's up there. My problem is not that there's a difference between us. I am happy being single, going to ACU, and all of those things. It's great. I'm happy for you. I'm so happy for you. I'm glad you're ahead. Don't look back. Like, go forward. He needs to look forward and go. And I can see you. Now, the problem that a lot of people don't share about this exercise is this is how life goes. When you're out there, this is how life is. People are racing forward to an unknown place up there that says success and how to do life well. And I think that's how the world has infiltrated all culture here in the church as well. Now, that's just my opinion. That may not be the truth. But this right now, the problem that we have, if we call each other a church family, if I call Jonathan a church brother, the problem is that he's there. And the problem is he cannot see me. Can you see me? Can you see what I'm doing? I know. Well, look forward. So can you see me? I can do whatever I do on this side, and he's not going to be able to understand and see me. This is what generational generosity is going to be about. Because instead of, and I know we're not talking about starting a riot, but I think this is the revolution that we definitely need to do, is to change this and not let the person that have a certain lifestyle be blind to the needs of other people that are still behind. We are so far away. This is how life is. But why is it the same way inside the church as well? What if the church is actually a place where 2 or more people, a vibrant community of 2 or more people around the table with Jesus? And so the idea for generational generosity is that instead of a line that we're racing toward, which I don't know where he's going to, but he's racing there. What if church was actually a place where it's a table that we get to look at each other and sit down and hear each other out? And that's the bottom line of it all, is instead of doing that, why don't we have a table? There are so many times where Jesus ate with other people from various backgrounds, different ages, and sat at a table and share that. And so that is the only thing I have to show. And I think a lot of times, it's not that, and I don't have an appreciation for the name Growing Young, because I think everyone in this church matters. Whether you're old or young, whatever you are, everyone matters. And we cannot let those different things, life situation, context that we are in, put us on that line of just racing through life. What if we build a table and just sit down and eat together? I need help. So, so this is, we went to the TAP class, the Young Professionals, last Sunday with Audrey, and we gave everyone a survey to fill out. And this is some of the words that came up from there. What do you love most about PV and the church? And this is just kind of in a simplistic manner. We analyzed what everyone said, and this is what they love about this church. If you see there, there's church, Jesus, people, together, young. I don't know if you understand, but what this says is that the young people that we think we don't understand as much, all that they need is just connection. Being connected and be a part of a family.
What Laz is describing with having this connection between generations, that's ultimately our goal and what we want to do. I want to expand a little bit, too, on the real problem that young people are bleeding from the church. And y'all know what I'm talking about. You've heard this, and you've probably personally experienced this, too, in your own life with young people that you know, or maybe in your family, or maybe your own children, that are not at church anymore. Statistically, 1 in 2 teens after they graduate from high school will not come back to church. And that is a serious problem, because that affects our families, that affects our friends, and ultimately that is a symptom of a church that is dying. And so what Laz is describing with having this connection between generations, we want to create that at peace, so that we can have an environment that is warm for young people to want to stay and be drawn to. I've been here for 6 years, and it has been hard at times to see how many of the teens have gone through the youth group but left church afterwards. And I'm sure, and I'm just the youth minister, and so I can't imagine as a parent how that would feel for them to see their own child not want to come back to church. So what we are trying to get our hands around with all of this is how to help our church be a place that young people want to come back to, and that young people who didn't even grow up here are drawn to. So I want you to take a second. We do this in the teen room all the time. I know this might be awkward for you, but we like to mix it up. I want you to talk to the person next to you or around you. Maybe how can you relate to this? How has this drifting from the church, or young people that you know that don't go to church anymore, how has this affected your life? So take a minute. Discuss that for a second.
It's all right.
Oh, you're totally fine.
It worked out. Anything, girl. So what I want, now I'm interrupting something important. I can tell now that there's some that this is an important question, and it really needs to continue. One of the things that probably would be helpful for you to know is what this group and its expanded version, there's another half dozen or more that are also a part of this team now, what we're focusing on. So Fuller, even though the findings are titled A Book Called Growing Young, it really is about churches that grow together and do things well. And so what I want to do is give you a preview of the six core commitments that churches that grow young or grow well are doing. And it's six commitments that this group's going to say, yes, we need to be committed to those kinds of things, because it's just those things that we take as self-evident but don't always happen. This wheel represents what they are, and I'm going to bring up the first two first and shortly describe them, because we've already begun some part of what they mean. And then the other four, we've not yet started our experimentation of how do we do that. The very first thing in the book is give somebody a responsibility, and with that responsibility, they're going to have some kind of an ownership and participation that's more than a spectator kind of a role. The title's Keychain Leadership, and the book describes someone that turns 16, and they don't know where to go in their car, but they just got a key to the car, so they now feel sort of empowered because they've got a key to a car. So where do they go? Well, they're a part of youth group, so they drive up to the church building, and they're telling people, I've got a key to the car. And so the person there at the church building is doing after school care says, ah, I got an idea. I'm going to give you a key to the building, and you can come help us with after school care. And so now they've got a key to the car, a key to the church building, and they have a responsibility to help with kids after school. Now, you know, icing on the cake, they also get the chance to fill the Coke machine, so they've got a key to the Coke machine and a right to use, drink all the Mountain Dew they want. This particular person winds up being a minister in a church. That's his life's profession. But the point is, when you give somebody a chance to have real responsibilities, it makes a difference. So we're starting to look for places where that might happen. And so one of those places that we happen to look at is this young gentleman right beside me, Josh Miller.
So I was asked to kind of describe a key I've been given. So if you don't know me, first off, I'm Joshua Miller. My parents here are Amy Lee and Joe Lee, wherever they are back there. I've always had a part in this church in some shape or form. So coming into this, just asking, being asked to be part of this group, it was a very honoring experience. It's never something I've been involved in, and just being asked to help grow the church young or grow generational generosity, I think that was a key in itself, just having that responsibility handed to me. Being part of this group, I was able to have connections with people that aren't my age, people that don't necessarily have the same background as me, and that helped me to see everything in a different way. I was asked to have one specific thing, but really this has changed my life. I don't think I would be the same person without this group. My key would, well, my life has changed. I don't know if there's a bigger key than that. So, thank you.
The second chapter talks about empathetic listening. And as we spent time with the Fuller research team, and there's a big team that researched this, they really poured into us the need to listen to people's stories. And so as we came back from that experience, one of the things we've started doing is trying to find ways to listen to people's stories. So we've done that different kinds of ways. Cindy Rose about to tell some of what she's done in some listening. And then Jerry Spears has been a part of a focus group, plus he's just a natural listener. And so they're each going to talk some about what empathetic listening may mean in what we're trying to do with this particular goal.
Well, first of all, let me just say, I have been so blessed to be a part of this group. And I've been encouraged because I was one of those people that as I have grown older, I stayed with my own peer group, and I have really lost touch with the culture of young people. And so I was one of these people that if you mentioned the millennials or Gen Xers, I would just roll my eyes, because if I'm really honest, I had the opinion that they were too affluent, spoiled, and selfish. That's only partly true. but aren't we all? Okay. So what I've learned by meeting and getting to know some of our young people has really validated what we read in this book, and that is that our young people are under a tremendous amount of stress that we probably don't realize. It ranges from academic stress, the pressure to achieve academically, to achieve in sports, other extracurricular activities. There's that perfect internship or the competitive job. And now there's so much more access to information. So our young people are more aware of some of the problems and issues in this world that when I was their age, it never entered my mind. And sometimes it's things that can trouble them. And so if you add social media into all of that, you just have this perfect storm of pervasive stress. Yet, in all of this, they're searching. They are searching for identity. They are searching for who they are, and they want to know where they fit in, where they belong, and what their purpose is. They are searching for connection. They want deep relationships, and they want authenticity. They don't want just some manufactured friendliness at church. They really want to connect with us and other people. And they can sniff out fake really well. They're looking for Jesus, and we can show them Jesus. So this idea of connection is so very important. And one of the things that, one of the tools that we can use to fuel connection is empathy, as Jimmy mentioned. So empathy is not sympathy. Sympathy drives disconnection. Empathy fosters connection. So empathy is feeling with that person. It's trying to get into their world and understand what it's like to be in their shoes without judgment, by the way. And empathy is really not that difficult. I was a little intimidated at first when I started meeting people, but I found out that you don't have to have a skill set to solve a lot of problems. You don't even have to talk that much. It's just listening. A few questions and just listening. Listening for their longings. Listening for their successes. Listening for their losses. That's so important to them. So as I have listened to some of our teens and 20-somethings, I've heard heartwarming stories, and I've heard some sad stories, too. And so real briefly, I'm just going to share a couple of those. The first one is heartbreaking to me, actually, because it involves a person who grew up here, one of our own, who went through the youth group, went to college, came back, and is no longer attending. It's not because they don't believe in Jesus anymore. It's because even though they didn't say it in these words, what I picked up on is they didn't have a connection. They didn't feel like they fit. And so that's somebody that needs us. They need some of us older people to reach out and talk to them and find a connection and empathize. But they also need people from their own age group to do the same thing. And so I say that because empathy is more than just generational generosity. It's not just older people listening to younger people or vice versa. It's all of us being empathetic and getting to know and making connections with other people. The second story is a great story. It's a great story of a young lady who 2 years ago was not a Christian, but she was looking for God. She had visited several churches, but just didn't feel like she fit in. And being that she lived in this area of town, she had driven by her church building countless times and decided one day, I kid you not, she thought, that building looks nice. Maybe I'll try them. So she came one Sunday and walked through the door knowing no one. And the first person she met was Sonia McCauley. And you can imagine the rest of the story. Sonia introduced her to Bill. And if you know Bill, you know there was a connection made. And so they took interest in her and they studied with her. And now she's one of our sisters and she regularly attends the TAP class. So you don't have to be part of this team to start listening. Listening is really pretty easy. And if we can just try to make those connections and listen to each other, then I promise you, you will be blessed in so many ways you can't even imagine. And we'll be stronger, we'll be better, and God will be glorified.
Jimmy started off saying that he was reaching the last quarter of his life. I'm well into my last quarter. But I still feel like I can live and maybe help some others around me. And we'll talk more about Bill here in a few minutes. Jimmy, I haven't been to California yet, to the school that I guess they have been taught from, but I'll go next month. Jimmy had me come to his office one day, and as he said, he talks. For quite a while, he talked. And he was trying to convince me to join this group.
He joined.
He had my son-in-law there with us, and I knew Mark needed to get back to work. So I finally told Jimmy, yeah, I'll do it. But now that I know what it's all about, I am glad that I did, and I'm anxious to go to Fuller, see what I can find out from them that Jimmy hasn't taught me yet. last Sunday we had an announcement from the pulpit that things were going to change a little bit. It's not a lot. Things are going to change a little bit. And a good friend of mine got up in our Sunday morning class and talked to our class about that at the end of the class, or before the end of the class. And the guy that I'm talking about is sitting right there, so he's the one that just made a remark about me a minute ago. But he told our class that they don't need to be afraid of change, first of all. Second, change is not going to put us in adverse to what the Bible says. We'll be doing what God is asking us to do. But it will also help our singing, and it'll help us to worship better. I think that's basically what he said. So if we're not doing anything the Bible tells us not to do, and if we are having a worship service that's more appealing for some of the people in our congregation, I think it's going to be a lot better for us. I think it also will be a lot better for us to be able to keep our young people engaged with our congregation. And that's one of the things that I think I'm looking forward to with this group that I'm with now, and learning more about how to keep our young people engaged with us who are in the fourth quarter and still here trying to work. That's about all I've got to say. Not like Jimmy.
I think you said too much. The next four parts of this book, the next four key commitments that churches make that are really growing and growing young, the next one is about focusing on Jesus. I got to listen to a young college student that's a member of this church and a faithful believer. We had lunch one day, and we got to talking about things we debated with our friends. And he, like me, likes to engage in a good, rousing debate. He said, the difference is what you wind up debating about is how you interpret certain things. I'm trying to debate with people so that they will believe that there is a God and believe in the Jesus that is the one that is bringing us all to God. And it's just a different kind of a debate. One of the key commitments really is, how do we bring everything back to Jesus as we do have those things that we feel so deeply committed to? But the commitment to Jesus is one of those things we got to figure out. How do we do that in honor of what we also stand for? The next chapter is actually in the book. It's called Warm is the New Cool, because this book very definitely outs those big churches that have rapid growth, but they're not really growing young. They're just, as Jonathan said, one generation. But warm churches are attractive. And so the book is encouraging churches to learn how to be warm. And so we'll spend some time doing that. The next chapter doubles down on the first chapter, which is emphasize young people everywhere. It'd be awfully easy to start somewhere and, wow, it was cool being with Josh. I've told people about our experience, and we would have these late-night conversations with all our group. And shouldn't brag on him to his face, but I think I've said this to him before. He had the rare ability to speak with confidence and respect at the same time. We were the bookends that trip of the age group, and he would speak with the kind of confidence you would want anybody that was a believer to speak with, but never speak in a disrespect for all these old people that were sitting around the table with him. It was wonderful. Doubling down on emphasizing young everywhere has a lot of upsides. And then the final thing is, how do we be a good neighbor? Well, this church has already got a rapid start on that, and I better quit because I've done what Jerry said. But I will tell you that in the breakout sessions where teams had to go together with a coach to help figure out what are we going to do next, we were the, as we told about our church, we were the envy of the room, because our church had already started so many things that this book says you should do. And so those are the things that that we're going to be about, those six things. And it has proven to be effective in having churches that really do capture the hearts and the faith of young people.
If you'll put the question up, Tiffany, I would love for y'all to talk just a minute about how do you think something like this could be meaningful for our church. So take a minute and answer that with someone next to you. I hate to interrupt, but is anyone brave enough to raise their hand and tell me what they said? I know this is a risk, but somebody will be brave enough. Anybody? I'm nervous standing up here. Somebody can do it. Yes, Samantha. Just yell it.
Sorry. I think that this could really be very, very, very beneficial because I'm 22, and I know growing up here, I had a very selfish outlook, kind of, and I was like, well, I'm homeschooled, and they all go to CAC and all this, and I would feel alone. Like, there were some times where I would go hide in the bathroom and not go to class because I felt so excluded and so distant. And I think something that really helps is people who actually stop and actually say, how are you really doing? And just the empathy thing, I mean, that changes everything. I feel like you can tell when someone's real, and it feels good when someone cares about you. And I think a lot of times when we come to church, especially me, with a selfish thing, like, well, who can I find to talk to that I already know? And it becomes all about us and filling ourselves when really we should be coming to church praying, God, who can I minister to? And you leave church more joyful than when you do going, okay, I'm finally done, I get out of here. And I think that this group, honestly, I think this could change the way we do church. I mean, just going to church going, who can I pour into? And I think that's what this is about. And so I feel like there really could be a lot of good, healthy change with this.
Steph. Cindy mentioned kind of a next step in how we can listen well and find someone that is a different generation than yourself to listen to. Another thing that's going to be happening on Sunday before class is we're going to be asking everyone to take part in a survey, a church assessment. And this is what we're hoping is to help us to define our reality here. How are we already doing with this? What areas can we focus on? Do we need to focus on more of like the warmth or the neighbors or empathy? And so the church assessment on Sunday is going to really help us know how to lead our church in this to be better. Those are kind of next steps. And I want to leave us and finish our time with a verse. You can go ahead and put that up, Tiffany. It's Mark 10, verse 14 through 16. Jesus said, let the little children, and they were bringing the children to him that he might touch them, and the disciples rebuked them. But when Jesus saw it, he was indignant and said to them, let the little children come to me. Do not hinder them. For to such belongs the kingdom of God. Truly I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God like a child shall not enter it. And he took them in his arms and blessed them, laying his hands on them. And the first thing I want us to notice in this is Jesus is reorienting like the community to focus on children. Children did not have a place of value, and the disciples were shocked that Jesus said this. Jesus is placing such a value on their life. And the second thing I want us to notice in this is Jesus is moving us from welcoming the children to becoming like children. And this is what we're talking about with the invitation to grow young.
We do want everyone to help us think about ways we can live into those six commitments. Appreciate everybody's participation tonight. And Josh is going to lead us in a prayer.
Pray with me, please. Dear Lord, in this journey we have, please help us realize that this isn't about us, it's about you. It's about the things we can do through this organization and through this church. Please help us be mindful of not necessarily keeping our will, but your will. Please bless all the people in this room and bless all the people outside of this room, Lord. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.